It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Amid the housing crisis, Congress is debating a bipartisan bill that aims to increase the housing supply.
But critics argue one aspect of the 21st Century Road to Housing Act will have the opposite effect. The legislation would require investor companies that build single-family homes to sell them within 7 years rather than keep them as rental units.
Nationwide, roughly 69,000 build-to-rent homes are under construction, mostly in the Sun Belt states. The Midwest accounts for roughly 13% of those homes, according to data from RealPage Market Analytics.
In a moment, we'll talk with a developer. But first, to learn more about this type of housing, we have Kurt Paulson, professor of urban planning in the Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison. Kurt, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So, out of the gate, if you could give us a working knowledge of what is build-to-rent housing.
So, to take a step back, about 15% of all single-family homes are rented, so that there's clearly a demand for people to have a larger unit, usually with a yard for the kids or the dogs, usually in a more suburban location. So, beginning about 10 years ago, there was a recognition that for a lot of families, they just could not afford to buy a new home. And so you see an industry develop where you build a brand new single-family home, but it's intended to be rented, not sold on the ownership market.
We see data that points to the southern swath of our country, the Sun Belt, to be a real hotspot for these build-to-rent developments.
Yep.
What is the situation like here in the Midwest and in Wisconsin?
So we've seen a lot less penetration into the Wisconsin market of build-to-rent, largely because we also don't have a lot of the production builders that you see in the rest of the country.
What are production builders?
So production builders are people who would build more than 1,000 homes a year. So listeners around the country might have heard of Toll Brothers or Hovnanian or Horton, these sorts of I know I'm forgetting a few others, these large production builders. So we've not seen a lot of this in Wisconsin. Instead, what we've seen is more of the purchase of existing single-family homes by investors, not a lot of the private equity investors, but more local investors, particularly in the older urban areas like Milwaukee and Kenosha.
Are they holding on to these investments or flipping them?
So a lot of these are being held for rent. So they're is a difference in the market between people who would buy an existing single-family home and then flip it for sale versus people who buy it to rent it out. And oftentimes, these are older homes that need a lot of repair. And so one of the structural barriers is that an average person who wants to buy a home to live in as an owner doesn't have the upfront capital. It's hard to finance the upfront capital to make the repairs. So in Milwaukee in particular, there's a few investors who own thousands of single-family units.
Turning to Congress, which is looking at restricting how long investors can hold on to these houses as rental units, and this idea is to encourage more home ownership, would this 7-year restriction that they're looking at for investors be able to do that?
So the short answer is no, but the long answer is more complicated. So the 7-year restriction only applies to units that are built specifically for rental.
Mm-hmm.
The legislation also has a restriction which would not require existing investors to dislodge their stock, but if you own more than 350, you would be unable to buy anything new. So the provision is trying to stop the kind of corporate or private equity investor in existing neighborhoods. But often by unintended consequences, it really is going to restrict the build-to-rent. And really, the build-to-rent market is a completely different kind of category. So what the legislation would do is say that when you build something specifically for rent, you have to sell it within 7 years. So it's already stopping a lot of developments, even though the legislation has not passed, because for a lot of the companies to make the math work to pay off their investors, they need to hold these build-to-rent single-family units for a long term. Now, the other thing I think it's important to say is that there's advantages and disadvantages of build-to-rent. And so build-to-rent is trying to tap into that market of people who want to live perhaps in a suburban area, maybe have more yard space. We know from the research that people who are able to rent a single-family home have a greater opportunity to live in more what we call high-opportunity neighborhoods, maybe lower crime rates, better school districts. So it cuts against this idea of home ownership, but it does give renters openness to a wider selection of neighborhoods. So the argument is that by stopping corporations from building rental housing, single-family rental housing, mm-hmm. right? This does not apply to multifamily, that you would create more home ownership opportunities. But all it does is stop one market participant, the equity investor, from participating. It doesn't actually create real effective opportunities for homeowners unless you're going to also create things like home repair programs, down payment assistance programs, which are not currently in the bill.
Programs that would help that up-and-coming buyer build their down payment and be able to hold on to their home with repairs and,
right.
and all that.
Yeah. So, again, there's the newly built homes that don't need a lot of repair, that are generally in more exurban and suburban locations. And then there's the separate issue of helping homeowners buy that kind of entry-level home in Milwaukee or Green Bay or Kenosha that needs $40,000 to $50,000 in capital expenditure just to bring it up to modern standards. I think in the debate, at least online, a lot of these things get conflated and confused.
So there is a Florida-based company proposing to develop 166 rental cottages mm-hmm. and townhouses in Franklin near Milwaukee.
Yes.
Would this type of development be affected by this federal legislation?
Yes, depending on how many total homes are in the portfolio of this company. And so, however, the townhome style would not be affected because the current legislation would only apply to 1 and 2 units in a building. So again, it's really trying to cater to that ideal of a detached house as being primarily owner-occupied.
Why are these built-to-rent homes popping up in suburbs and, mostly oriented toward families?
Well, there's not a lot of land left in urban areas to build these. And generally, they're in school districts that might have better scores or a perception of higher quality. Plus, they're generally managed as a comprehensive subdivision, so you just need more land. And the land that is available for development is on the urban fringe.
So from your assessment, should Congress or Wisconsin encourage more build-to-rent housing here?
Well, like any policy, there's a deep trade-off, right? And so there's a lot of people in the development industry who are concerned that by trying to restrict private equities from investing in single-family homes, you're cutting off one of our biggest supplies of new home construction, which is cutting off opportunities for perhaps more moderate-income families to live in neighborhoods of choice. So I tend to take an all-of-the-above approach to housing, more of everything everywhere. And particularly because the only way that we can build new housing for ownership is really at the higher price points given construction costs. As a second best, we should consider helping more families be able to access opportunities.
We're just not seeing those entry-level homes being built.
No. And so, again, it's people are reacting to a failure of the housing market where houses are really expensive and entry-level opportunities are disappearing. And, of course, it's easy to find a villain to blame. And that the research is pretty clear that the villain to most people is developers and builders and investors, when, of course, that's not really true. There are larger structural issues in the housing market.
This really large housing package moving through Congress, 40-some bills, what do you make of it in total? Out of curiosity.
So there's about 50 to 100 provisions. They've been all circulating in various forms over time. And I think it's bipartisan. You clearly are seeing and hearing people want action on housing affordability. So this is kind of a cut and paste of everybody's wish list into one giant bill. And, of course, in order to get enough votes to pass, you need to throw in a lot of stuff, some of which is pretty technical. But a lot of it, which is designed to kind of unlock additional supply, kind of reduce a lot of the unflexibility in current federal housing programs. So there's a lot of good things in there. But this is the one that's gotten the media attention, is because it would kind of – an unintended consequence is it would cut off about 100,000 units each year. So about 10% of what we build in single family would disappear. So there's a lot of good things in the bill, and we can get really nerdy and technical on it. But, you know, it's Congress, so who knows what will actually come out of the other end of the proverbial sausage factory.
We will keep watching. Kurt, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That is Kurt Paulson, a professor of urban planning in the Department of Planning and Landscape Architecture at UW-Madison. Now let's hear the perspective of a developer who builds this type of housing. Josh Walreich is a UW-Madison alum and co-founder of Heyday. It's an Illinois-based company that has developments in Oak Creek, Cottage Grove, and Sun Prairie. Josh, welcome.
It's great to be with you again, Kate.
I know you've been probably watching what Congress is doing here on housing and considering this legislation that would require investment companies to sell single-family homes within 7 years of construction. Would this affect your business?
So fortunately, it won't. As your previous guest, Kurt, had stated, he hit the nail on the head. This is really focused on detached single-family homes, one and two units per building. The Heyday right now is only building we have 4 to 8 units per building, and we aggregate those buildings into communities of anywhere from 100 to 150 homes. So as long as we don't build duplexes to the tune of more than 350 homes, the provision that requires sale of those homes will not apply to us.
Do you feel like you dodged something here?
You know, a little bit, sure. But, you know, the bill is, as Kurt was saying, there's a lot of good things in this bill and a lot of bad things. A lot of different people that are trying to figure out ways to fix affordability and just the lack of single family homes in general available to homeowners.
Are there many companies out there building these single family homes to rent? What do you see?
We see a decent amount of it, but in the Midwest where we're focused, and specifically in Illinois and Wisconsin, there isn't a lot of single-family detached homes for rent being built. There's really not that much BTR in general. It's a lot more prevalent in the Sunshine States. And, you know, Wisconsin, where it's being done, I don't know of too many other companies that are building this product, but those that are building attached, very similar to Heyday.
Why do you think build-to-rent isn't taking off in the Midwest and in Wisconsin?
The build-to-rent detached housing is really being built, as Kurt had said, by the public home builders or more of the institutional home builders, and they aren't very prevalent in the Midwest. Midwest is really dominated by local home builders that are not traded publicly and are building probably somewhere between 100 and 200 homes a year. So with that market really being dominated by a much larger institutional type home builder, you're just not seeing as much of it in the Midwest.
What is demand like for the units you're building in these multifamily buildings?
It's been fantastic. We've really, you know, we had an idea of a demand that needed to be met, but you never really know until the product hits the ground. And so the first project we built was in Sun Prairie. That was 170 individual homes, and we're about 96% leased there. The second project we built was in Oak Creek, and that project is 100% occupied with a waiting list. So demand has been very robust.
Is that what you expected, and has it been consistent from the start in terms of the properties being filled?
Yeah, they leased up very quickly. At both properties, again, 170 homes in Sun Prairie, 130 homes in Oak Creek. Both of those projects were stabilized in just about 12 months. So from that point to today, which for Sun Prairie, it's been about 3 years, and for Oak Creek, it's been about 18 months, both of those properties have stayed above 95% occupied.
Are there any reforms that Congress could make or even state governments could make that would help to alleviate the housing crisis in so many communities?
Yeah, there definitely is. And some of these are being proposed at the national level. But I think it's really important that for real reform to happen, it's got to happen at the local and state levels. And anything that expedites the ability to get to the permits would really, really be helpful. One of the things would be that, and this is proposed in the federal bill, that there are a set of approved plans that a municipality would go through and decide this is a product we want. And if a builder like myself comes forward and finds a appropriately zoned piece of land and wants to build that approved product type, there's an expedited process to get through the zoning and entitlements and to build your product.
How are tariffs affecting the home construction business? What have you seen there?
So anything that adds to the cost of building a home is going to hurt the supply. So tariffs obviously would add to the cost of the homes, but the truth is we aren't seeing a material cost increase from the tariffs. There's a lot of different components that go into the cost of building a home. Some are soft costs like interest from the bank, impact fees from the municipality. Others are hard costs, and those include labor and the actual materials that go into the home. For the materials that go into the home, it's a significant portion of the budget, but it's just not a if you increase that by 5% or 10%, it's just not a material number in the overall cost of the project. So while our costs are going up, it really isn't affecting our decisions as to whether or not to build a project.
What about inflationary costs for those building materials?
Yeah, it's definitely an uphill battle. It's another major component to what's causing us to have to charge more for rent in order to make the returns work for our investors.
What is costing more? Can you be more specific about that?
Well, right now, lumber is definitely costing more, and anything that is related to oil is costing a lot more. Much of the products that go into a home are manufactured abroad, so shipping costs are a big part of a single-family home or the product that we're building. So with oil going up significantly since the start of the Iran war, you're seeing material prices go up in the cost estimates that we're getting from our contractors.
What does the future hold for you with construction? Do you see more developments going up in the future?
Yeah, we're very aggressive on trying to find places to build our product and trying to find municipalities that are open to the product that we deliver. So we've got a great stable of investors that see the housing shortage across the country of over 4 million homes not being remedied anytime soon. And with a supply imbalance to demand, we think that the future for achieving decent market rate returns on our investments is really a good future. So we continue to try and find great locations to deliver these homes to municipalities and areas that are desperate for homes.
Josh, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Josh Walreich is co-founder of Heyday. It's a build-to-rent developer with housing developments in Oak Creek, Cottage Grove, and Sun Prairie. Earlier, we spoke with Kurt Paulson, a professor of urban planning at UW-Madison. We talked about the build-to-rent industry and potential new restrictions on investors who own this type of rental property.